From bureaus worldwide, this is FSN.
And thanks very much, Ollie. How you doing? It's Friday afternoon. It's just after 4 p.m. UK time. I'm Richie Allen, of course, honouring my pledge to be with you this afternoon. Got a few things to talk about. I have no idea how long that will last. I think it might be an hour. I think it might be a bit less. But I'm not going to bore you. I've got some interesting things to talk about as we look at the big stories of the day. From an alternative perspective, this is your Richie Allen Show. You're always welcome to it.
Welcome back to the most listened to independent radio show in Europe. It's your Richie Allen Show. It's the Richie Allen Show, broadcasting live on richieallen.co.uk and multiple platforms around the world. And now, here's your host, Richie Allen.
And happy Burns Day to my Scottish brethren and sistren. If you celebrate the life and times of Robert Burns, hope you've a good day and a good night. I know a lot of people do celebrate and they get not enamoured, they get very animated on this particular day. Good stuff. It is Friday the 25th of January 2019. It's just me and you for the next 45 minutes to an hour. I will of course be reading your tweets, so tweet me anytime during that time and I'll read the tweets and the comments out as we go along. Alright then. I tell you what, it was very, very weird this morning. Got up early, as I always do, out of the sack around about 5:45 a.m. Went downstairs, knew that it was going to be a bit milder today, thank God. But I had no idea what would face me when I opened the front door here in South Manchester. 'Twas mild. It was actually 10 degrees this morning, just after 6. It's incredible, really, after the very cold temperatures we'd had. I thought I'd have the old scraper out, you know, going at the old windscreen there, cursing the future Mrs. Allen because I was going to drive her to work. But no, it was unbelievably mild. It's been very wet and windy, but thankfully that really cold snap seems to have gone for the time being. Again, you know why I say that. There are people less fortunate than us who don't need it. So, I'm not going to talk about the Mueller investigation and Roger Stone. I'm not going to. And the reason I'm not going to get into it is because I think it's nothing but scripted drama and theatre. And I think it's a nonsense and an irrelevance. It doesn't matter. It's the sort of story that plays into my own theories about who people like Donald Trump and Theresa May really are. They're not really in charge of anything. They're not running their respective countries. They're not important. They are just puppets. And the things that they are given to deal with, namely the things that Trump and May are given to deal with, are the things that Truman Burbank was given to deal with in the Truman Show. I'm sure Trump and May think it's all very real, but it isn't. It's nothing but theatre to keep people, you know, gripped by it and talking about it and arguing about this nonsense, this nonsensical crap that Trump is owned by the Russians or that the Russians helped Trump secure his victory in the election and all of that. It's a total irrelevance to me. So I just can't see the logic in talking about it. If you want to hear about it and if you want to get involved in the Twitter and Facebook screaming matches with people who identify as a different type of political animal than you, by all means do so. But for me, it's a complete and utter nonsense. There you are. Stone was arrested in Florida and he's been charged with 7 counts in the Mueller probe. Fill your boots about the Podesta emails and the hacking and all of that crap. It doesn't matter a damn. The whole thing was dreamt up to get you more invested in the system, in the political system, to convince you that it is more real and more relevant than you used to think. I've been saying this for years now. We were, because of the terrific work of many alternative researchers, men and women, people had been waking up to the notion, to the idea that politics is nothing but a nonsense, a theatre. I know I'm repeating myself. I know I'm doing that, but it's important. People were waking up to it, understanding it. So the elites had to resubmerge people into that sea of politics that, as they said in the film, The Omen, the eternal sea. How do we get people believing it's real again? And this is what's happening. In my opinion, it's garbage. Doesn't mean a damn thing. Right? Right. Hey, Goldman Sachs has been saying that Brexit is terrible today. Would you have believed it? Who'd have believed that Goldman Sachs? Oh, Christ. I'm not even going to get into that one. I could play you some audio from Goldman Sachs reptilians, but I'm not going to do any of that. Goldman Sachs, who'd have, you could have knocked me down with a feather. The UK Chancellor of the Exchequer, Philip Hammond, is in Davos. It's the conclusion of the World Economic Forum. That nonsense. Davos is full of people saying the same thing, that we cannot have no deal with the European Union. We need to have some deal or we're all screwed. So Philip Hammond and Amber Rudd, the Work and Pension Secretary these days, apparently they've been threatening Theresa May with resignation if she cannot get a deal and if she refuses to take no deal off the table. 'Tis all mad, dear listener. The Irish Taoiseach. What's the Taoiseach? Well, it's the Irish Prime Minister. He's Indian, by the way. It's just a crazy world we live in. I'll be called xenophobic for saying that now. Even though I'm not, I find it amusing. As I said, it's all a game, it's all theatre. Doesn't matter whether he's Indian, whether he's from Timbuktu, whether he's from Narnia even. Narnia. The fact is, it's just an absolute mess. Yes, I wonder what Constance Markovitch and James Connolly and Michael Collins would have made of if you'd have told them way back in the day. Like, guess what? In 2019, we'll have an Indian Taoiseach, a gay man who's the Taoiseach. Would you believe that? Again, his sexuality is totally irrelevant. It's not important to me. I wonder what they would have made of that in days of yore. They might have been much more clever than we think. And they might have seen through all of that and what's really going on. Well, the Irish Taoiseach, Leo Varadkar, is joining the fear-mongering. He's in Davos as well. And he's saying that Irish troops could return to the border in the event of a botched Brexit. Irish troops, the Irish army. We couldn't beat fucking Hartlepool. Right. But he's threatening that if we don't do something about this no-deal Brexit, Irish troops will go back to the border. He said a hard border could involve people in uniform, possibly a police presence or an army presence to back it up. Varadkar also said that Ireland had been victimised by the Brexit process. Leo Varadkar, and to be fair, in recent years, every Taoiseach who went before him is nothing but a whore for the European Union project. Ireland what have some of my guests been saying recently? The Irish are indentured labour to the EU process. A country that lost its sovereignty years ago. A country that must get permission from Germany before deciding, well, how will we spend money in the coming fiscal year? What will we? Oh, we better ring Germany first. Better ring Germany. Get Germany's permission. It's marvellous. Marvellous. Let's leave Brexit. I bet you're delighted with that. Wow. 11 minutes in and he's finished with Brexit already. I am going to leave Brexit because we might get absolutely swamped in it on Sunday. On Sunday View, because inevitably the Sunday broadsheets and tabloids will be full to the brim of Brexit. Of course they will. Brexit. 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 Now, here's one for you. Speaking about, well, I kind of told you a bit of a white lie there. Not a white lie. Not a black lie. This is Brexit related, but it's not like heavy Brexit. It's kind of funny. Staff at a Westminster restaurant, which included a pro-immigration, anti-Brexit message at the foot of its bills, have received death threats. Restaurant staff getting death threats. From who? What's going on? Well, there's a restaurant called Westminster Kitchen, and the I newspaper has reported this. I think it reported yesterday, but the media has picked up on it today. Westminster Kitchen will give you a bill after they have fed you. with the items on it. So if you've had a couple of bottles of Pellegrino, whatever it's called, or this water, sparkling water, you've had a bottle of wine, you've had a three-course lunch meal, whatever, you'll get the bill. And at the end of the bill, underneath where it tells you how much your bill is, there's a message on every single one. The message reads, Brexit is bad. Immigrants make Britain great. They also cooked and served your food today. So this is at the base of all the receipts. Brexit is bad. Immigrants make Britain great. They also cooked and served your food today. What's the harm in that? I don't see any harm in it. Free speech, anyone? Free speech? Free speech for everybody, even people you might have a slight disagreement with. Anyways, they're getting death threats. Presumably, those on the far right will say that this is just a made-up story, that it's just not true. But they have been tweeted death threats from anonymous Twitter users. So the staff have been targeted, and the restaurant's owner, Ibrahim Dogus, has been speaking to the media. Do you want to hear Ibrahim Dogus? He spoke to the BBC. He's a Labour councillor as well as being a restaurateur. So he's a Labour Party councillor, runs the restaurant Westminster Kitchen. They're getting threatened because of their anti-Brexit message on their bills. Here is Ibrahim Dogus speaking with the BBC.
I've established this restaurant, Westminster Kitchen, about 3 years ago. On the day of the debate around Prime Minister's deal for leaving the European Union, I got really frustrated. I was reading the news constantly, checking up, seeing what's going to happen, trying to find a way to express my own feelings towards the Brexit, towards the contribution immigrants are making to Britain and so on. So on the day, I thought that the best way I could do something about this would be to print a message on our receipts. The message was very simple, and it said, Brexit is bad, immigrants make Britain great, they've also cooked and served your food today. Initial reaction was horrible, I would say. The variety of threats we've received. I will give you a few examples. In one, one guy says, we must burn the place down. That's one of the threats you get. In another, they will name me as a person, Ibrahim Dogus from Lambeth, and then they will say, we will be seeing him very shortly, very soon.
Yeah, it's sinister stuff, all right. Free speech, anyone? Again, tough shit, Paddy. He can put what he wants on his receipts. I'd have a few questions for him, though. This is the thing, you see. Rather than threaten people and threaten the staff and all of that, have a conversation with him. I'd be very interested in talking to him about immigration. You know, about the brain drain that is experienced by developing countries as their nurses and doctors and, you know, workers in other sectors come into the UK and come into the Republic of Ireland. It devastates countries in the so-called developing world. It's not a good thing. It's also not a good thing when people come from Eastern European countries and North African countries into the service industry and work for less money and lesser conditions than people who have lived all their lives in this country. It's not good, mate. That's not a debate about racism or xenophobia. It's a practical debate to be had about the devastating effects of immigration on particularly working class communities. But as for the people tweeting him, threatening to kill him, well, like I said, I'm sure the far right will say it's not us. It's some sort of scheme designed to make us all look like thugs and animals, those who want the UK to properly leave the European Union. Paul tweets, Richie, how does one issue a death threat to a restaurant? I have a vision of a swarthy man phoning in to let them know that the Duke of Edinburgh is on his way over to pick up a takeaway in a car with no brakes. Good stuff, Paul. Well, I didn't play you the entire BBC audio because it goes on for about 3 minutes, but they were able to identify some of the people working in the kitchen who do have their own Twitter accounts, and they were getting threatened and that sort of thing. I know. This is what it's reduced to. This is what it's reduced to. Look, the biggest story of the week, and it will be a big story, and it'll be a massively important story in the foreseeable future, and it has been a massive story over the last few years, is the story of the attacks on the integrity of the sovereignty of Venezuela. Hugely important right now, has been for 20 odd years. Venezuelan opposition leader Juan Guaido has said he would consider an amnesty for President Nicolas Maduro if he cedes power. Right. How nice of him. How nice of the American whore, traitor to the people of Venezuela, claiming himself as president illegitimately. How dare he promise Nicolas Maduro that he won't be harmed if he leaves the country now. Guaido, as you know, declared himself interim president on Wednesday, said he was reaching out to the military, including all sectors of society, the military, all other sectors of Venezuelan society, appealing for them to back him. Washington and its puppets have attempted to delegitimize Maduro, as you know by now, but so far the president retains the support of Venezuela's military, which is crucial, of course. I don't know what to tell you. I was watching Sky News earlier this morning, and they had a three-way debate on Venezuela's plight. And I thought, great, you know, this is good. Surely Adam Bolton Bunter, the fat waste of fucking space that presents a show called All Out Politics on Sky News in the AM, waste of space, Bolton, he chaired this three-way debate. But I thought, okay, they've got three people on there. There's going to be somebody sticking up for the Maduro presidency and what Maduro is trying to do. So let me tell you who they had on there. They had on a guy called Isaias Medina. He's Venezuelan. He's in Florida now. No, he isn't. He's in Massachusetts. And he's a former UN representative. So they had a Venezuelan guy who's now in Massachusetts, who hates Maduro. They had Bianca Jagger. You all know who Bianca Jagger is. Human rights, you know, Nicaraguan human rights advocate. You know her, of course. And they had Oscar Guardiola Rivera. And he's an international law professor at the University of London. I'm not going to play you any of this. It was horrendous. The former United Nations rep Medina in Massachusetts and Bianca Jagger both said that it's not a US coup and Maduro is a bastard, basically. And Oscar Guardiola Rivera, International Law, University of London, basically said, well, it is a coup and the US shouldn't do it. But then he went on to blame Maduro for the economic mess the country finds itself in. It was a disgrace to journalism. I mean, I know I've said this before, and I know it might make you roll your eyes. It would make you roll your eyes because you haven't worked in journalism. You haven't worked in media production, in editing, in script writing, in copywriting, in news presentation. You haven't, so you don't understand it. What's happened to the business? It's a disgrace. And Bolton sat there effectively with 2.5 people against the Maduro presidency. Fox News and the wider media in general is just as bad. It's properly laughable. I've picked out a clip from Fox News for you. I know you'll think, well, it's obvious, Richie, Fox News. But no, it's the same on CNN. It's the same on C-SPAN. It's the same on NBC. Fox News, while covering the Maduro story, Fox veteran Sean Hannity, well, they had a debate too. A debate on the rise of socialism. Now, this is proper mad, right? They had two participants, and again, for a fleeting moment, I thought, all right, well, we'll get some sort of argument going on here. They were talking about Maduro and the rise of socialism in America, allegedly. The participants in the debate are Sebastian Gorka and podcaster Ali Beth Stuckey. Sebastian Gorka and podcaster Ali Beth Stuckey. This is what qualifies even as a debate now in modern day television news. The first person you will hear will be Sean Hannity. You just couldn't make this shit up.
You know firsthand, as a world traveler, that socialism, when tried, has failed. Obama tried. He wanted to redistribute the wealth. His policies, stifling regulation, high taxes, redistribution, 13 million more Americans in food stamps, 8 million more in poverty. Doesn't work.
Sean, my parents crawled across a minefield to escape the kind of system that Ocasio-Cortez wishes to create in America.
Fuck off.
I think it's very telling that she has these latent totalitarian tendencies whereby she thinks the people's will in Venezuela should be ignored and Maduro's regime should be recognized. Can you imagine, Sean, if in the last 6 days the media had paid as much attention to Venezuela as they did to the fake news about the Catholic Covington schoolboys being racists? If they'd actually told the truth about Venezuela, nobody in America would wish what this woman wishes to put upon us. 40 countries have tried this system. It has all failed. Redistribution of wealth means you have to take it from somebody else first.
Now keep that in mind, okay? They're trying to define what socialism is on Fox News. So he said redistribution of wealth means you've got to take somebody else's wealth from them, right? Take somebody else's wealth first, he said. Keep that in mind because it's important, because I'm going to be talking about this in a minute.
First, socialism is inherently dictatorial, and this woman, Ocasio-Cortez, wishes to see that in America.
Right. Well, it hasn't worked here and it hasn't worked anywhere else. And yet we keep on seeing these recycled ideas from people like Bernie Sanders and Ocasio-Cortez. And like you said, they used to be on the fringes. We could kind of laugh at someone like Sanders or laugh at a 29-year-old who really knows nothing about politics. But when you see someone like Nancy Pelosi or a mainstream Democrat acquiesce to people like her, it really starts to worry you when the majority of the country seems to be leaning in that direction.
Some debate that was, wasn't it, right? Okay. Fantastic debate. She mentioned Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. She's a Democratic congresswoman elected last year. New York, I think, is it? Correct me if I'm wrong. Neither Ocasio-Cortez or Bernie Sanders or Jeremy Corbyn or John McDonnell are socialists. They're not socialists. They never have been and they never will be. They are social democrats. There is a massive difference. Now, Gorka, Sebastian Gorka said redistribution of wealth means taking something from someone and giving it to someone for nothing, basically. That's a massive lie. And I'm going to be explaining that as I go along in the next 5 or 10 minutes. 40 countries tried socialism. It failed in every one of them, said Sean Hannity on Fox News. That is a lie as well. It's a massive lie. And I can prove it. You got to leave your delicate sensitivities at the door here. Forget all the programming that you've received from RTE, Radio Telefiche Éireann, from the BBC, from Fox. Leave it all at the side. I'll talk to you about what socialism is in a minute. And I'll do it in a way that you haven't heard me do it before. Not going to repeat myself. Scary stuff, that. That was a debate on Sky News. Here's a debate. We've got a debate for you. Let's get two people to say the same thing. Bloomberg is a television channel, as you know. It's a financial news channel, covers business and the markets. I know you know that, just in case you don't know. Mark Mobius is a leading international money manager, worked for Templeton. He runs a $100 billion fund. He's a Zionist, Mark Mobius. Money people and people who invest will know who Mark Mobius is. Mobius was on Bloomberg this morning and he was asked about Venezuela. And the reason they invited him on was to ask him about opportunities in Venezuela now that it's all kicking off. You see, you do get the truth on mainstream media sometimes. You just have to be looking for it. It's like a needle in a haystack. So here we have billionaire financier Mark Mobius, Zionist, runs a $100 billion fund, worked for Templeton. This guy's in it up to his absolute tits, right? Here he is on Bloomberg this morning. Listen to the question, listen to his answer.
How does Venezuela at the moment get itself out of its mess? It seemingly has two presidents right now. We've got now perhaps US pressure coming to bear on the country's neighbors who are coalescing against President Maduro. Everything really to have here. It is one of those countries which would be a classic one where you'd be greedy when others are deeply fearful.
I mean, you have to love it, don't you? I was so glad I was watching Bloomberg this morning. Here you have two greedy fat cats. The presenter is some sort of money manager himself. And you have the big, fat, greedy bastard cat, the big pride, the lion master himself, Mark Mobey, is sitting there. And the presenter says, oh, lovely. Right. Have a listen to it again. You just can't make this stuff up, you can't.
Who are coalescing against President Maduro. Everything, really, to have here. It is...
Everything to have here. This is brilliant. Everybody is coalescing against Maduro. We can do stuff here with this country, right?
One of those countries which would be a classic one where you'd be greedy when others are deeply fearful.
We'll be greedy when others are deeply fearful. Ah, what does Mark say to this Mark Mobius?
Well,
first thing he did was he laughed as he was rubbing his hands. He went, yeah, lovely, lovely, jubbly. It'll be ripe for the pickings now when we get rid of Maduro. Will you hear what he says?
When Chavez came in, we were out. And thank God we listened to what he was saying. He said he was going to take over all these companies. We said, we're out of there. And so we've been saved the downturn.
Brilliant. So years ago, Mobius knew that Chavez meant what he said, that he was going to nationalise everything and take the country's natural resources and the country's wealth away from the financial elites outside the country that had robbed Venezuela blind. So when Chavez said this, Mobius believed him and took all his money out of Venezuela. Things might be different now, though.
Now we're interested. I think if there's a change...
Oh, we're interested now!
A real change in government, Venezuela would be very, very interesting.
Brilliant. If there's a change in government, Venezuela will then be very interesting. Wonderful. I mean, this is how it works, right? It's live on Bloomberg this morning. They're just telling you how it works. Now, what was even more beautiful? Mobius is 82 years old. I don't want to sound disrespectful to older people, but he's 82, and I'm wondering, is he the full shilling? Because then, with no prompting whatsoever from the presenter, Mobius basically says, well, this is why Venezuela is screwed at the moment, or this is why Trump wants to intervene in Venezuela. Well, you hear this.
But you must remember, this is all about oil. The U.S. wants to get a hold of this oil. At the end of the day, because as you know, Venezuela has been a big supplier to the U.S., and Trump is interested in lower gas prices, lower prices at the pump. So if we look at it from the viewpoint of oil, then we can understand what's happening with Venezuela.
And the truth shall set you free. Wonderful, isn't it? Wonderful. That interview will be scrapped. That interview will be dumped from the Bloomberg archives. Fantastic that was this morning. To see the Zionist hedge fund, 100 billion man, tell the truth about Venezuela. To hear the presenter chuckling as they're talking about the opportunities for venture capitalists and vulture funds to rape Venezuela in the event that Donald Trump gets what he wants. It's truly wonderful. When we come back, I'm going to talk a little bit about socialism, and I'm going to talk about Salvador Allende in Chile when he came to power and how he demonstrated at that time what real socialism, not the Jeremy Corbyn lies and the Bernie Sanders nonsense and all that crap that you are told is socialism. I'll tell you what socialism is when we come back after a little tune, just a little tune. Just to give me a breather while I can get some agua. Some ishka. Ishka Baja, maybe. Right, so this is the Richie Allen Show then for Friday. The time is 27 minutes to 5. Good to be with you live on Fab Radio 2, richieallen.co.uk. Triggerwarning.tv, I don't know if we are, we might be. Back with socialism after the Hollies. The Hollies on the Richie Allen Show, long cool woman. in a black dress. Yeah, I had to think about that. I'm trying to multitask here. I'm answering people, I'm talking to people, and all this is going off and going on. Thanks for joining me. I tell you what, it's a pretty healthy audience. Looking at the old numbers there, I very rarely look at the stream when I'm on. In fact, I don't. I get all the stats the following day. But I'm pretty impressed with the numbers this Friday afternoon for something that is a very rare thing. I'm on with you today in lieu of the fact that I wasn't with you on Monday. This is the Richie Allen Show. It is Europe's most listened to independent radio show. Thanks for tuning in. Busy tweets. They screwed Venezuela in 2014 by Saudi Arabia flooding the market. Oil dropped to $37 a barrel. Trump's another puppet imposing more sanctions on Venezuela, collapsing their economy. Now, thank you. Thank you. Right. I'm going to tell you a story. Do you remember Jack and Ori? Do you remember Jack and Ori? Our American listeners, what the hell is Jack and Ori, Rich? Jack and Ori was a BBC children's television programme where a story would be read on television for children watching at home. Sometimes, in fact, most of the time when I was a kid, the story reader would be an actor or an actress. An actor or an actress. And I love this. I'm going to tell you, I'm going to do a bit of a Jack and Ori now. It's about Venezuela. Venezuela. I've been talking about this for the last few days, did a monologue on this last night, and I want you to keep that in mind. I want you to keep in mind what's going on in Venezuela. Okay. I want to talk about Salvador Allende. Now, Salvador Allende became the president of Chile back in 1970. Most people know that, right? Salvador Allende became president in 1970. What did he do when he became president of Chile in 1970? When I say I'm doing this with no notes, I swear to God, this is from memory and from studying, right? So forgive me if there's a little factual, when I say a factual inaccuracy, I might get a date wrong, but I won't get any really important facts wrong. But don't be pedantic with me because I've not got any notes, right? Okay. What did Salvador Allende do back in 1970 when he became president of Chile? Well, the first thing he did was he nationalised Chile's copper industry. You might know some of this, and that's good. Keep it in mind. The pedantic listeners amongst you will say, Richie, he nationalised copper, but that process began under Eduardo Frei. Yes, it did. Eduardo Frei or Frey. Yes, a few years earlier, Eduardo began to make inroads into nationalising the copper industry. Why was that important? Well, copper at the time was 3/4 of Chile's national exports. That's huge, right? I mean, you can't even imagine that. 75% of Chile's sales as a country, if it's Chile Incorporated, right? 75% was copper. But, prior to Eduardo and Allende, got to get this right now. Yeah. Chile's copper industry was owned by US companies like Anaconda and Kennecott. I'm sure of Anaconda and I'm 90% sure Kennecott. So the country's biggest export and their biggest employer and the most important industry in the country was owned by American corporations. Now, to the anarcho-capitalist listener, to the conservative listener, I will listen to you. I will speak with you all day. I will debate with you all day. But you can't tell me. You can't give me a reason. You can't justify to me how a country's industry can be owned by corporations of another country. But they were. And Allende said, and Eduardo Frei said, we're not having it, we're taking him back. And brilliantly at the time, if my history memory serves me correctly, Allende told Kennecott and Anaconda, the American corporations, not only can you fuck off, but we're not going to give you any money for renationalizing copper production. You can just fuck off on your bike because you've made billions out of it and screwed Chile and Chilean workers into the ground. So we're not going to give you any money for it. So just piss off, right? This went down like a lead balloon in Washington, D.C., of course, as you might imagine, right? What else did Allende do? He nationalised the banks and he said adios to the many foreign banks that were in the country. There were some Chilean banks, of course, but there was an awful lot of foreign-controlled banks in Chile. So he told them, off you go as well. He rode them out of town on a rail. Lovely. You're liking Salvador Allende now, aren't you? If you didn't know anything about him, you're loving this story. This is a great Jackanory, this. He nationalised 90 industries in year one. And the elite, the financial elites and industrialists of the world were tearing their hair out. They couldn't believe it, that he was doing it. But he did it. At the same time, he introduced land reform. See, this is real socialism now. Forget Sean Hannity and the lie that socialism has never worked anywhere. Forget the lies that socialism is about taking money from Peter to give it to Paul. That is a monstrous fucking lie. I can't stress this enough. It's a lie. So, land reforms. Took the copper back, the banks, land reforms. What did he do? What did he do with land reforms? Well, up until he came to power, Chile was no different than most Latin American countries. It got most of its food was imported. Most of its food was imported. We'll talk about the other countries another day, but we'll talk about Chile now. Why? Why was Chile importing most of its food? Why not so much farming in Chile? I hear you cry. Well, because private landowners often, with footprints in the United States, oh yeah. Private landowners were sitting on land doing sweet FA with it, waiting for the prices to increase, speculating in all of that, rather than using the land for production. So what did Salvador Allende do? He said, well, I'll tell you what, I'll have 5.5 million or so acres of that land. Tough shit, Paddy. I'm taking the land back and we're going to farm it, be Jesus, is what we're going to do. That's what he did. Imagine what's going on now in the Rothschild-controlled banks of the West. Imagine what's going on in the Rothschild-controlled parliaments of the Western countries. It was absolute chaos. Salvador Allende got on very well with his neighbours. He set a minimum wage. He brought in education reforms, visionary stuff. Free university tuition for all. He doubled maternity leave. And he gave free food for the worst off in the country. He did. That's what he did. He did. And of course, the anarcho-capitalist and the conservatives who's listening to this is thinking, it all went tits up. You can't do that. Can't give free food to people. You can't decrease the minimum wage. Can't do all that. It's got to be paid for. Well, he then undertook a massive house building project, built over 1,000 houses, tried to anyway, started off the process, worked for everybody that wanted it, well paid work with all the benefits that you could dream of. Now, listen carefully. This is off the top of my head now, so forgive me. These figures. I have a memory like an elephant. Let me think. Right, he took an enormous amount of people out of taxation by raising the minimum taxable income level. I think that around 30% of people who paid tax the year before he became president, 30% of those people didn't have to pay taxes anymore. Very important, this. Hugely important, right? 35% of people who had paid tax last year from 1970 onwards didn't have to pay tax. What did that mean? It meant that purchasing power rose by a quarter in the first year of his presidency. Now, this is important. Keep this in mind. Purchasing power went sky high. And wait for it. The rate of inflation fell over 10% in the first year, with average real wages rising by nearly a quarter. Now, this is really important. And I wrote this down on my hand because I looked this up today. Minimum real wages for blue-collar workers were increased by 56% during the first quarter of 1971. Wait for drumroll. While in the same period, real minimum wages for white-collar workers went up by 23% as well. Everybody was doing well under Salvador Allende. 'Twasn't just people on their knees living in shanty towns. Everybody did well. And while that was going on, the rate of inflation fell. It fell. The rate of inflation came down. Let it sink in. It fell. Now, some of my opponents, I don't mean my opponents because I'm not important, some of the opponents of what I am saying will say, it's a bad thing when inflation goes down like that. It isn't. It's not bad because wholesalers and retailers and manufacturers are keeping more of the money they earned because of the tax reforms. Are you with me now? Are you with me? This is really important, right? Inflation came down because everybody was earning more. Not only was everybody earning more, but they were getting taxed less. You see, the Sean Hannitys and the Bill O'Reillys and the whoring liars in the mainstream media will tell you that guys, that socialists like Bernie Sanders and Jeremy Corbyn, they're tax and spenders. Tax and spenders they are. They'll tax the wealthy, they'll tax everybody, and they will spend and spend and spend, and then they'll all go bust. Jeremy Corbyn's not a socialist. Bernie Sanders is not a socialist. There's no such thing as a socialist in Western politics today. It's not bad when inflation goes down. He didn't tax the bejesus out of everybody, Allende. He left them keep more of their income. That's white-collar and blue-collar workers. And he took 30-odd percent of the population out of taxation altogether. Wholesalers, retailers, manufacturers keeping more of their dosh. So lower prices do not present a massive problem. Everything was swimming, going swimmingly well in Chile. Some might argue that's a bad analogy because they'll say it all sank on them. Well, we'll talk about that briefly in a second. Remember that. The corporate-controlled media lies time and again in their perverted false definition of socialism, taken from Peter to give to Paul. That's bullshit. That's not what Allende did. It's not what Hugo Chavez did. It's not what they did. Under Allende, wages for, as I said, I'm going to keep repeating it, for blue and white-collar workers went up while they were taxed less. The cost of living was low. Now, mainstream economists will tell you that the price to pay for the policies of Allende and Chavez, well, they'll say, and if they were on this program, they would say, is massive inflation and inevitable collapse. And historians now say that it all went tits up for Allende in Chile because he fixed the prices of basic things like food. And while he was fixing the prices and all of that, this led to hyperinflation and it caused all sorts of chaos and it brought Allende into direct conflict with the poor people of Chile. This is a historical lie and historical... It's an outrage that they talk about it in those terms because it didn't happen. It didn't happen. Let me read a paragraph from thenation.com on Chile under Allende. This is thenation.com. And it's a conservative writer writing about Chile under Allende. This is what he wrote. The middle and upper classes were having to share the fruits of production with the lower classes. They never became accustomed to that new distribution and they whined incessantly of the hardships that Chile was undergoing. The international press repeated their complaints, seldom bothering to verify them. Meanwhile, greater numbers of Chileans at the bottom of the economic scale enjoyed even the benefits of the new distribution system, but their voices of gratitude never reached the foreign press media. And that article goes on to clarify what I said to you a minute ago, that Chile's wealthy were not losing money and were not being robbed and were not having their wealth redistributed. They were not having their wealth siphoned off. It didn't happen in Chile. Everybody benefited from what Allende was doing. The press at the time were saying that it was all going belly up in Chile after 2 years of Allende. They were saying there's nothing on the shelves, nothing in the shops, and a black market is thriving for basic goods. Does that sound familiar? Does that sound familiar to you? It should sound familiar to you, because it's what's happened in Venezuela. What was going on in reality in 1971, in 1972? I'll tell you what was going on in reality. The United States, the World Bank, the Export-Import Bank, and the financial institutions of the world stopped Chile stone dead with sanctions. They refused Chile loans that were needed. At the same time, the multinational corporations were harassing the government of Chile, bringing lawsuits against the country in European courts to stop the unloading and the sale of Chilean exports. And as I said, the exports were 75% copper. Do you see what's going on? Can you see it? Please tell me. Ignore your right-wing friend who says that socialism never works. The US, the World Bank, the Export-Import Bank destroyed Chile. Destroyed the country. CIA documents that have come out in the last 5-10 years admit that they were trying to undermine Salvador Allende 10 years before he became president, knowing what was going to happen in Chile. The banks, sanctions, not reckless policies by the socialist president of the day. Allende's socialist policies didn't ruin Chile's economy. International financiers, Western intelligence agencies, countries who obeyed Washington brought chaos to Chile as they drove down the price of copper. Does that sound familiar to you? Oil, anybody? Venezuela, anybody? They prevented Chile from selling copper. And on the 11th of September, 1973, the Chilean military, aided by the United States and the CIA, enacted their coup against Salvador Allende. See, we've seen it all before. It's a script my actress friend, Jean-Anne Crowley, an amazing woman, listening to this now in the west of Ireland, will have read many scripts, learned many scripts, many dramas, many stages, many production sites, many film studios. She'll have learned a million of them. And we'll know when to recognise when the story is the same. It's the same story now as it was back in the early 1970s. The same narrative, the same script, the same intelligence agencies, the same tactics. Salvador Allende proved that socialism not only works, but it thrives. And it benefits everybody, not just the tiny, 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 tiny few. And he also benefited that it is one of the greatest, he also demonstrated that it is one of the greatest lies in human history that socialism is taking money off of hard-working people who went to university and used their intelligence to build themselves up and make a life for themselves. That's a crock of shit. Socialism has never been about that. Socialism. Salvador Allende was socialism. Hugo Sanchez was socialism. Look what happened to them. Do you think Hugo Sanchez really died of cancer, really? Think so? But who's talking about this, you know? You've got people talking on television today about the reckless management of the economy by Nicolas Maduro. These economists and these academics know damn well what happened to Venezuela. I explained this last night in the monologue of the programme. I talked about 2014, what happened in the country. They know that the food shortages, that the hyperinflation, that the chaos in the country is not down to a greedy president who's squirreling away the oil sales of the country for himself. They know this. But the mainstream media is owned by the same multinational corporations who brought down the Salvador Allende government and the same multinational corporations and banks that are trying to bring down the Nicolas Maduro government now. And they are probably going to succeed because I don't see any real intervention by Russia or by China. I don't see any genuine movement in the future by Russia. I don't see any mobilisation by Russia against what might end up as a civil war in Venezuela. As the Trump government says, we acknowledge this imposter as the genuine president. And as they say that, Nicolas Maduro is illegitimate. They're trying to drive the country to the brink of a civil war by saying that Juan Guaido is the legitimate president. He's not. They're hoping for a war there. Absolute chaos there. Jean Ann has sent me a message. She said, Richie, you're talking about true socialism, not what we'd be experiencing now, masquerading as such, maybe. Well, that's exactly it. There isn't a socialist commentator, let alone a socialist politician, anywhere in the world in 2019. Excuse me. Anywhere in the Western world. They don't exist. That's true socialism. Jeremy Corbyn is not an advocate of what I just talked about there, pertaining to the Allende version of socialism, the Hugo Chavez version. Corbyn is a champagne socialist, a social democrat, hijacked now, of course, by Blairites and by Momentum. It's exactly right. You know, totalitarianism, Jean Ann says, maybe the baddies are keen on totalitarianism, which has feck all to do with that, though they use the language to suit them, as Orwell predicted. That's exactly right. It's a brilliant point she's making. They have labelled people now as socialists, and they are as far from real socialism as Genghis Khan. And at the same time, the media has reconstructed a definition of socialism, which again is as far away from socialism as Pluto is from the moon. That's our moon. They've constructed a narrative around socialism. That's an utter lie. This narrative that what socialism wants to do is, it wants to come and take what's yours. It wants to tax the shit out of you and take it off you because you did well for yourself. You did well, and the socialists just want to take it off you. Sweaty bastards, unwashed fuckers who don't want to do a day's work. They want the state to give them everything, and they want to take it off you. That's not socialism. Allende didn't touch the wealthy, Chile's wealthy elite. Didn't touch them. And as I demonstrated last night, and people who've only heard this for the first time, go back to yesterday's programme and listen to me demonstrate how Maduro did not go after the wealthy in Venezuela either. They didn't. It's not what socialism is. Going after people. Socialism is what Salvador Allende did in Chile in 1970, 71 and 72. Look where it ended up. Look who was the architect, or what was the architect of his downfall. Look at the methodology of it. It is chapter and verse what's happening in Venezuela today. And I don't suppose there'll be another independent radio show anywhere in the world tonight that will talk about this. The most important story anywhere at the moment. And that's it for me. I'm out of here. I'll be back with you Sunday morning at 11 a.m. UK time with Sunday View. We'll look through the Sunday papers and all the rest of it as usual. Hope you got something out of that. Feel free to disagree with it. Feel free to shoot it down. Feel free to sling the mud and the name calling that goes with all of that, but you'll be wrong. You're totally wrong. You have no idea what socialism really is because you've been brainwashed by Western media for the entirety of your life into thinking that socialism is robbing the well-off, stealing from them to give people who don't want to work your money. Couldn't be further from the truth. Speak to you Sunday. Until then, it's bye for me.